And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
Frustrating start to the season, Andy. Some good quarters, some good halves. A lot of frustration.
Yeah, look. I don't think our expectations were super high coming into it, but there's been moments of niceness. But yeah, overall it was... bit flat after that game. We were on a chat, and I joked that I was furious about the substitution policy, and look, it was and just with the difficulties of text, you thought I was being serious, but it was a bit tongue in cheek because
it is a favourite topic of yours.
It is, and look. Frankly, it was suboptimal in my view, but we, as we previously discussed, we think AFL coaches fundamentally don't view it the same way we do, because you know. But it was kind of tongue in cheek because just doesn't feel like we have the cattle at the moment, and we're in exploratory season at the moment.
We are. It's probably worth talking about. Unfortunately, there's three different. Richmond teams at the moment. There's the senior team, the VFL team, and the list of injured players. And sadly, that list of injured Richmond players is longer than the number of senior list Richmond players we have available for the VFL.
Yeah,
it's a tough season.
It's not great. I'm in rich territory for... people for the dark web of Richmond supporters who are on our health and conditioning staff, and also rich times when even the official club podcast is deep diving Caro's into it in the anti-Richmond conspiracy theories, which, by the way, all of which I subscribe to. Pretty much the statistical evidence is there, and you know, when you've got a 4 p.m. Sunday time slot during the Grand Prix, and then you get the 4 p.m. Sunday then time slot the next week after being sent up to Gold Coast as a sacrificial lamb to pump up the team, and then get a 5-day break, you know. So sign me up for all the conspiracy theories, but I don't want to overdo it, because if you're in the Richmond discourse and the broader community, you're probably very familiar with it already.
It is. Oh, I thought I'm less on the umpiring conspiracy theory, but I did. I thought it was quite a poorly umpired game, to be honest. That had poor feel for the game at times. Some of the pushing decisions. There was a deliberate out of bounds for Nank, where apparently he was trying to miss the forward he was kicking in the direction of. It seemed inexplicable. Yeah, it was frustrating. Like many things, it was frustrating.
Look, long term, I subscribe to there's unconscious bias in the against Richmond, the statistics say it, but I will say in that game, towards the end, it felt there were a few free kicks where it felt like the team's feeling the same thing as the fans, and there were a few free kicks where I thought that was a bit dumb.
Yep, how was that? This podcast is hugely in favour of Shea Bolton. And even I'm getting a bit frustrated with some of the 50-metre penalties he gives away.
Yeah, no, that's it. And he was always the sort of... The discourse around him is sort of very much framed in this... He's the next Dustin Martin, and then it's fun to bag him when he's not. But he was never that player. He was always the player. He was always the icing on the cake. And... when the cake's not very good, there's only so much the asking can do. Have I stretched that analogy too far?
I've actually followed you so far. He was really good on the weekend. His game was far from flawless, but He played really well, right, and was responsible for far more than his share of our most exciting moments, along with Liam Baker, who's perhaps less aesthetically thrilling, and more workmanlike. But yeah, they were both really good on the weekend.
Yeah, Bakes was actually off the charts on the AFL ratings as the best player. And there was a beautiful junk time goal in there, which did help his stats. But I see Bolton as the kind of player who'll win you a final, but isn't necessarily the guy who'll get you from sort of 6 wins to 8 wins. That's probably too general a thing. But he thrives in time and space and opportunity, and this team at the moment is not giving him enough of it. But he was still good on the weekend.
No, that's true. I thought actually between Baker, Bolton, and Mansell and Campbell, the small forward brigade was in pretty good form.
I'm not going to mention it, but like Dustin Martin had a very good game on the stats.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, like if he wants to play next year and someone's prepared to pay him a ton of money, whether that be Richmond or another club,
look,
have at it.
If someone wants to pay him the amount of money he needs to play football next year, then that's the sentence for me. Whatever. He's a notoriously private guy, and I'm not going to second guess his thoughts. But if he wants to play, and someone's willing to pay him what he wants to pay,
Go it's not him. Even art. It's fill your boots like that.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Put yourself in his position. About this is, you know, it's not like he's got a rich and successful career as being the next Brian Taylor in front of him.
No, we're assuming not.
No, and he could be very successful in his post-football career, but he doesn't know that yet. None of us know that yet. He has every right to maximise innings now, and he is still playing good football.
Yeah.
And he is, at this stage in his career, he's a creative sort of half-forward type.
Yeah.
He is a plus player.
And we look dangerous every time he gets the ball.
Yeah, and he is not perfect, and yeah, it's just that. It's an imperfect team, but he is not the problem.
No, absolutely not. We've done it again, Andy.
What's that?
We've gone too long without talking about the Rucks.
Oh. To be honest, I mean, you go.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I'll just clear the flight path. This is your show.
Look. It was very emotional for me, obviously. A lot of intense feelings seeing the two line up. And I must admit, like, football is ultimately theatre. You know, we're only watching it because it's fun, and because I've got this weird kink, I'm into the Rucks, and that's one of the things I enjoy most about football. And I was hoping for like the epic Gorn Soldo battle last year, where Soldo was incredibly valiant, and it was a battle for the ages, and both players would have been feeling the bruises for 6 weeks afterwards. I didn't care, almost didn't care who won, but I just want to see that epic. And we didn't get it, Nick.
No, disappointingly not.
No,
look, it was very competitive.
It was competitive. They are mature, grown-up Rucks who are very physically able. You know, Nack won. I thought he was in Soldo's head a bit. Soldo gave away a couple of free kicks where I went, that is not, like, that's, Lord knows I've watched a lot of him. And it was him, there was something, it was clearly, it was not, he wasn't fully in the right mindset. But, you know, unfortunately, Nank's clearances, he had a great clearance game. So was it 8? I don't have the stats in front
seven.
Of me. But
yep.
7. And he had more stats. But, you know, Soldo had more hit-outs to advantage. Neither of them were particularly good on the AFL ratings because none of their clearances or their their hitouts were. They, yeah. That, look,
the,
to be honest,
the goals from stoppage.
Yeah, it wasn't. Neither of them were particularly influential in the game, and yeah, it was just a bit of a. And that happens, you know, often with Wolves, but it wasn't like they weren't the centre of the game, which was a little bit of an anticlimactic for me.
No, definitely so. Yeah, I think I texted you that it was a points victory for Nank. But yeah, neither changed the game.
No, and that's, you know, like I said, I wanted the theatre of it. I wanted the. At the end of the day, it's like almost a pro wrestling matchup where the former tag team breaks up and then they have their rivalry face off. And it was a decision on a count out. So it was not the matchup I was hoping for. And look, to be honest, Nick, the whole game was a bit like that. You know, it was a team that is, I think they're definitely top six in the betting odds. And a team that's sort of
bottom half of the eight, I think.
Yeah, and we're sort of, you know, in the, you know,
the murky,
comfortably murky below that in the probabilities
part of the ladder,
and we're -11 in the end in the inside 50s, and we were brave and we were plucky and we're in the game and we led at certain times, but there was sort of an inevitability, you know, with hindsight in the third quarter.
They just dominated. We had periods of the game we controlled, but they had more of them. Even going into halftime, leading by 11 points, they'd controlled long parts of the first and second quarter. So it wasn't all that much of a surprise when they came out firing at the start of the third quarter. It did strike me, like, just, we have quite a disjointed team at the moment. The 12 premiership players with 9 guys under 50 games, and we had 4 under 4 games.
It was a funny old team. It got sort of younger towards the start, and you know, Brown coming in and
coming that, in for Broad,
like that. It was exactly right. It was a very mixed team. It's a team that, you know, and the team who was our best player according to the ratings, and it was the player in the middle in the prime age group in the late 20s was Liam Baker. So it was kind of. I agree. It was a funny team, and look, I enjoyed. We are recording this after the preliminary selection, and I'm almost enjoying the anger around the Kane not getting selected.
Kane McAuliffe. We'll get to him.
We will. But it was kind of it's a funny transition period. It was almost like, and that's why I couldn't be angry about the sub, because there's just so much else going on here. Like, you only get about the sub if you think angry about the sub in your heart, because you think it could be a really close game and an extra 1% will make a big difference. But in that game, you know, it didn't feel like it was going to take a lot more than 1% to make the difference in the end. But we should go for a positive. Who was, of the young kids, who impressed you?
If you could somehow combine Trezise and Brown, that'd be fantastic. Like, as I did in his first game against Port Adelaide, I was really impressed by Trezise's athletic competitiveness, like his ability to just throw himself in a contest for a last minute spoil when he's out of position. I was also struck again that, you know, his disposal seemed a lot cleaner with the time and space you get in the VFL rather than under the pressure of AFL senior football, and you know, that's going to be a challenge for him to adjust to. And of course he got injured and he's out for a month. I thought Tom Brown showed really good composure at times. I think defensively probably wasn't as good as Trezise, but yeah, I like having him out there. I'd certainly want to persist with him. Lafau, well, had a couple of exciting moments, but sort of struggled to find a way to impact on the game. But yeah, look, he's the pre-match ceremony with him, with Steve Morris, and with his family doing the haka, that was lovely. Like, I think of all, you know, we are very much a club in transition, which we'll talk about a bit more later, but Steve Morris and the VFL program is definitely a real asset at the moment, and yeah, it's, yeah, that was lovely.
It was lovely, and I really second all those thoughts, but yeah, Trezise, and of course, inevitably, he's out for 10 weeks now with a really bad injury.
Oh, was it 10? Oh, I thought it was only 4. God.
I could be wrong. I thought it was Cindy Moses, and I could be wrong. I apologise. I actually haven't watched the Mayhem video because it was... it's pretty grim at the moment. But before that, I thought he was... I really liked his game, and it was kind of the, oh yeah, he's really competitive, and he gets stuck in, and he's athletic, and yeah, he was the one I was saying, oh, I'm not quite sure he wasn't in the round one team, like, not a criticism, but just a sort of a, yeah, he's up to it, but yeah, of course, inevitably, he got injured, and I also, like, not to, Brown is not playing great football, but he has a smack of class. Mm. Potential that
he does, and he had some nice moments where he just made a split. He made the right decision in a split second, like that. Yeah, it's definitely something to work with. The injury report this week is Trezise out, that he'll be available in around a month. So maybe that's why you thought it'll be 10 weeks.
Yeah, well, anyway, thank you, that's better news. Small forwards are always a keen area of interest for you.
I mentioned it before. I actually think, yeah, that Judson Clark didn't have a great deal of impact when he came on, but otherwise I thought the small forwards were really dangerous, and notable, we got one goal each out of Lynch and Bolter, but otherwise, it was the small and medium sized players that were the real scoreboard threat. And look, Seth Campbell, a lot of people talking about him, and yeah, he's going well. He's making good decisions. He's coming up. He's coming up in the running stats, both for the sheer amount of ground covered, but also high speed running as well, which is really good to see. Yeah, he's a definite positive from the season so far. Tom Lynch being out on the field is a positive, but he's very much working his way back. Like the
Totally.
That him not being able to take advantage of a matchup against Zach Thatcher, who's workmanlike, but far from one of the better key defenders in the league. Like that's a sign that he's still got a fair way to go.
Look, it's not a perfect measure, especially for key forwards, but he did have a negative AFL rating.
Mm.
And while I'm being grim, it's not going well for Thompson Down.
No, I think he's getting dropped for Sonzi this week.
No.
Which is unfortunate.
No, he had 12 disposals, and he had 7 contested possessions. That's not enough for midfield. He attended 70% of the centre bounces.
Yeah.
And So he's around the ball, and he had two clearances.
Yeah, yeah, we need more. I thought if they were going to, well, I expected them to bring McAuliffe in, given how well he played. Yeah, and Dow's the obvious choice, but.
Yeah, and for all of our much love for Marlon, he didn't have a great game either. Little bit absent on the in the possessions. But were there any other positives for you? I'm not doing a very good job of positives this week, Nick. I'm sorry. It's like the game wasn't a disaster. We were playing a team that's probably top four.
I've got a couple of positives for you. I thought as against Carlton and the third quarter against Gold Coast, when Dan Rioli's up and about, it makes a big difference for us. Like, his pace and skill cuts up teams, which, you know, sometimes our ball movement gets pretty stodgy, and he's a real circuit breaker. I thought Jack Ross worked hard consistently across the game and did some nice things, and sort of showed more as a clearance player than sometimes he has before. And
he led the team on possessions as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there were five players in front of the first Richmond player, but he was, he was above 25, which is good going, and showed a bit of class, I thought, as well.
And Taranto wasn't far away from a very good game either, isn't it? Because he had a poor opening round. I think he's working into the season. And Ben Miller.
Yes, good point. Thank you. I agree.
The defence struggled with the quality of service the port forwards were getting, but he tried very hard, and he won most of his one-on-one.
Yeah, look, I've been a bit unkind on Ben Miller, particularly as a key back, and I think I've described him as the 5 out of 10 guy, that whatever position he plays, he's just good enough to get you beat. But that was a good game. I think Dixon got a cheapie late on him, but there were a lot of good. Dixon had a lot of good quality opportunities that Miller neutralised. So yeah, that was a good game for him.
Yeah, and look, he had a good game in the VFL, in the last VFL practice game. So yeah, it's nice. It's good. It's good to see him build on that. Look, should we talk about the VFL? I want to talk about the VFL. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, as much as I'd like to roll around in the muck of this game, I think maybe perhaps it's time to move on for the sake of timeliness.
So, we played the Gold Coast, VFL Premiers. And my God, do they have a lot of young academy talent, both in the team from last year's draft, but had a kid get 28 disposals who's draft eligible this year, and he looked really good too. When Kane McAuliffe sort of first did something prominent in the first quarter, they sort of dutifully read out his bio from the program they had. And at the end of the game, both commentators said he was best on ground. Like, 31 disposals, 7 inside 50s, 6 clearances, well-taken goal. He and Sonzi in the first half in particular were just dominant. And worked off each other nicely. Often McAuliffe setting up Sonzi, but they both... Look, one of the knocks on McAuliffe was that he didn't spread from contest very well as a junior, which sort of, while he was a hard-at-it ball winner, he didn't get enough sort of ball out on the outside, receiving it from others. But they worked together well, and yeah, I thought McAuliffe had a nice balance to his game. Sonsi wasn't, you know, McAuliffe was fantastic. Sonsi wasn't as good, but was still very good. Covered a lot of ground.
I think just watching the game. By the way, agree with your analysis. The game was enjoyable. I also enjoyed the commentary, which was
biased. They were really excited about it.
Yeah, they were. They were really having a crack, and it's actually likable in VFL. And we've just been watching primetime game on Channel 7, and sort of it lacks some of the cynicism of the big production football. But it was really fun, and it was great the way I turned on the VFL when the word went round amongst Richmond supporters that McAuliffe's going off, and it was great. Watching it, big booming kick.
Yeah.
He's got a
long left foot peg.
Yep, he's got penetration on the kick. It was sometimes he seemed to have a pretty free license to just go out and get the footy.
Yep, which, see ball, hunt ball. Yep.
Is great, and you know that's when you win the game. It was clearly the right call. But it was fun.
His tackling stats as a junior were off the charts. Maybe that's not always from his director. But maybe that's see ball hunt man.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, whatever. It's fun. He's our best young midfield prospect, and it's nice to see him get a chance to shine.
No, in a game with a number of, there were several, there were two first round draft pick midfielders from the Suns from last year's draft. He looked as impressive as they did, at least.
I really like Swansea though. If they had AFL ratings for the VFL, I think he would have come out really well, because he was doing the little Shane Edwards-y forward hand pass, chip kicks in the forward line that set up goals. I'm drinking the Swansea Kool-Aid as the kid finds the places in between that, you know, really good creative forwards do. Honestly, it was like watching the two of them, like McAuliffe looked great, but I was as high on Swansea, if not more so, just for the cleverness of his play.
The damage, yeah, the damage. Look, they both got good service from Naismith and the Ruck. He was up against yet another first-round draft pick from last year. He's a good young athlete, but whew, that was a pretty tough day at the office for him. I was impressed. Both Hugo Rouse-Smith and Caleb Smith off halfback both started slow but really worked into the game well. Rouse-Smith ended up one of our better players, and Caleb Smith was good. Like, it's for a kid making his proper VFL debut. 19 disposals, and just kept at it. Like, he's a good... there was a highlight in pre-season of him taking a big mark on someone. Like, he didn't have a full pre-season with injury coming back from what was a really serious injury, so I think they'll probably slow play it, but yeah, it was a good start.
Yeah, it was... great. I know you're very high on him, which is nice.
Yeah, there was pre-season buzz about him last year before he went down with the injury. So, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so as I'm stealing a gag off a friend here, but at what time do we shut down the AFL to go for the VFL Premiership?
I like... tracking the VFL listed players and just keeping an eye on them for the draft, but just there's a couple of 18-year-olds or one was an emergency on the weekend, the other wasn't in the squad, so I sort of cooled my jets on them slightly. But Steve Morris is talking talking up a kid, Nick Girolami, who's sort of the James Trezise background, like a 21-year-old, so 191-centimetre defender who's, you know, he's not spent any time in the elite AFL pathway. He's come from Mount Eliza, but yeah, he keeps talking him up as a talented kid. So yeah, and he played on the same day on the weekend and did a good job. So yeah, keeping an eye on him.
Now, Nick, full credit to you. While other people who were nameless, Dan, were texting me about how poor Samson's stats were, you were the first to point out to me that his game time was very low, and Morris was glowing about him in his post-match report that he was very good on limited game time and could have kicked 3 or 4. But that isn't a segue for me to ask about what was your first reaction when you heard he got a 3-year extension?
It was more than I expected. It's clearly a show of faith. I would have thought too, but look, it's a vote of confidence.
It is. I refer you back to the conversation we had in pre-season where we talked about how both Sam Naismith and Mason Cox were playing their best football in their 30s that they'd ever played, and you know, had surprised,
yeah.
And that they are very hard to predict. There is no way on what, well, it's not no way, but based on what we can see, I was surprised too, but you know, you've got to assume rationality and good actors that clearly they have faith that he is going to be able to put on that extra bit of muscle and strengthen the contest and be an effective player. So I thought it was, you know, this is a thing where we have less information on the available information. I think we're all a bit on the slightly concerned about whether you'll ever...
Yeah. Yeah, I think he hasn't quite had the preseason we'd have hoped. So yeah, he should take confidence from it, and yeah, I hope he builds with that.
Well, certainly interesting and indicative. It is not nothing that a 3-year contract is a big deal. So yeah, interesting. Anything you wanted to talk about before we get on to Sydney?
Oh, look, I wanted to mention we've announced today we've appointed Chris Tosh as our new recruiting manager.
Yes, of course, I'm sorry. Yes, big deal for Richmond Tiger Talk.
Big deal for Richmond Tiger Talk. Look, I was... you know, I always liked Matty Clark, not least because I did an interview with him once and he was lovely, but... I think he's had a pretty tough job in recent years. With no, Matty Clark had fewer top 10 picks than any other recruiting manager in the AFL, which made it, you know, made the job harder. But he's got the senior list manager job with West Coast, so we've brought in Chris. And look, he was fired as part of the sort of, how to describe it, the Ross Lyon / Stephen Silvani takeover at St Kilda. Stephen Silvani brought in somebody from Carlton, sacked
Tosh. Legendarily effective use of resources list manager Stephen Silvani.
Yeah. Good at drafting with the first pick in the draft. Some of the others. St Kilda have got some really good young talent. Some of it's academy. Some of it's academy picks. And it is... I have that is one thing that has stuck with me looking at the AFL over the first couple of rounds of the season, like how much the draft has been compromised by academy and father-son picks, and how badly we've been left behind in that process. Like, you know, the Bulldogs got Jamar Ugal-Hagan literally with the first pick in the draft with an academy pick, and then followed it up with a top five father-son in Sam Darcy. Fremantle have had 10 academy players drafted since the system came in, and we've had none for Richmond or any other club, and there's none on the horizon for this year, as far as I can tell. So yeah. Anyway, everyone has good things to say about Chris Tosh from what I've seen. And St Kilda's recruiting, and he's clearly done a pretty good job in recent years. And I'm not sure what else you can say about that. I mean, and as you said, getting forced out by Stephen Stilvani doesn't seem like...
Look, let's be honest.
Doesn't seem to have been on merit. Yeah.
We are both subscribers to the theory that, which is based on the far bigger data sports of American sports, that unless you're spectacularly incompetent, most drafting, the sort of the great drafters will have a few good drafts, but most of them don't sustain it over time, and that you can be very bad at drafting, but most teams over the long run are about as good as drafting as each other, and most drafters are. We've clearly picked up a competent one.
Well regarded in the industry. Yeah,
and look, and recent good record, as you pointed out. So it looks promising, and it didn't look... It's entirely credible that he left his last club, not based on a merit-based selection.
Mm.
Potentially the worst-run club in the AFL. With the worst management. So, yeah, look, I'm 1,000% fine with it. And I've heard a few people who know him say he's an absolutely cracking, lovely bloke.
Mm. And he had several other clubs interested in him as well, which feels like a good sign.
It is, and we just happened to have that. We had one of the very few windows that the jobs don't come very up very often. There's only 18 of them, and we had the window, and wasn't a promotion, which normally is what you have to do to fill that gig. So, yeah, it was good news. All right, Nick, Sydney.
They're going pretty well. They've had three good wins to start the season. None of them spectacularly dominant, but they're all pretty good wins. Collingwood in round one. Melbourne, Collingwood, and Essendon. Their three wins. Sorry, I looked it up. They're going well. Their injury list is low. If you're a Sydney fan, sort of all the players you'd want going well are going well. Mentioned about academy players, but Errol Goulden, Isaac Heaney, Nick Blakey, have all very successfully made the jump from rugby league and rugby union. Logan McDonald, still more perhaps hype and trade speculation than production, but he's pretty good. Actually, surprisingly enough, they're not a particular... Despite some pretty big names in midfield.
They're not a good clearance team. Yeah,
no,
I was going to say the same
not,
thing.
They're not a good centre clearance team. But they are very... They are good at having better quality ball into their forward line and denying good quality ball to the opposition, which is a problem because we've been giving up good quality ball into our defense.
No, absolutely. Just rewatching the Port game, it was just it was really noticeable how good
the pressure wasn't great.
We haven't mentioned it, but the sort of there has been media coverage during the week that our tackle pressure has just been abysmal. It's going to be a real problem this week.
No, not good. It's their small and mid-size. Like, the tall forwards are competent, like McDonald, McLean, and Amate. Useful, particularly when given silver service, but sort of the ones that really scare you, you know, Ched Warner, Papley, Golden, they worry me. Grundy settled in really well at his third club in 3 years, and that's going to be a challenge for Nank. They're always pretty solid down back with Rampy and McCartan and others. But yeah, and look, they've got a couple of key players injured, including Callum Mills. But yeah, they're going better than us. I'm worried.
No, it's not my. Good. Grundy is the absolute classic player. He can play one position well, and he plays it really well, but he happened to be on the one team that had a better player than him, on the maybe two player teams that have a better player than him in that position. It was a bizarre selection, but the natural order has been restored, and he looks awesome, and Nank doesn't play well against him.
No. He's a bit of a butcher with the ball. He's second in clangers per game, but yeah.
Yeah, if you're criticising a ruckman's disposal as his weakest thing, like most ruckmen don't get the ball enough, don't kick enough for you to notice.
No, whereas he kicks more than he handballs, and he covers a lot of ground. Like he's a very good athlete, but yeah, it is. It is interesting, the whole... I was thinking about the Dockers, actually, as you know, because I've always been a very big fan of Luke Jackson, and they've got him and Sean Darcy signed up for a very long time. And is it not the Melbourne situation again?
Yeah, you played it brilliantly when we were texting the other day, where... You were talking about Jackson, and I was going to the point of that I'm not sure they work, that they're together, they're optimized, and then you had already, before, as I was writing that, you came back and suggested, are we trading for Sean Darcy? Because you might be a Luke Jackson fan, and yes, he's an objectively better player. I love Darcy.
Yeah, we would love Darcy on this podcast.
He's kind of the, with the greatest respect to Nank, he is the slightly rich man's Nank, taller man's Nank. I think taller Nank is a good way to put it. Unfortunately,
he's Nank's, under contract for a very long time.
And Nank's playing really well. There is no true case to he is not the problem here.
No. No, and like Nank's younger than Grundy. Like he turns 30 at the end of the season. But yeah, you think he certainly got some good years left in him. But yeah,
so right, Nick, 21 and a half point. Sorry, go.
I was just gonna say, can we talk ourselves into some hope?
There's always hope.
Yeah.
I think
we'd both be more excited about this game if they'd picked McAuliffe.
Totally. Not,
I'm assuming it's only a matter of him. He didn't get... They were very careful with his game time in the VFL preseason, so that's the only reason I can think of. They haven't picked him, but...
Yeah, look, it's a methadone hit, but since we've already seen him in the ones, but I'm excited about Swansea.
Yeah, that'd be fun, assuming he gets picked. Yeah,
let's not forget how excited we were about him 2 years ago.
Yeah,
definitely. And he's got talent. So, just to wrap it up, 21.5-point spread to sort of just weasel my way out of your question. 21.5-point spread seems about fair to me. A controversial take there that we're agreeing with the people who were paid millions of dollars to handicap these games. But, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, look, because they've played well against us at the MCG recently, including an early season game last year that was very uncomfortable, so... Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it.
I don't have a read on this team yet, as in Richmond.
No, that's true.
And our best
has been good, and as you say, that the Swans, like we've been pretty good at clearance at times. Look, Prestia being out is certainly a blow. Well, Prestia and Hopper being out there. Yeah, I think. I think when the team, when it comes together, looks pretty good, and whether we, and we still play a good style for the MCG, so, yeah, it's extending those periods for longer. I think that's what gives us a chance.
Yeah, look, I will watch it. I'll watch it with enthusiasm, as I always do, happiness of life is outcomes minus expectations, and it's fair to say the expectations are pretty low.
Yeah, I'd love a LaFau goal.
Nice.
I reckon players would go nuts, and there'd be some people in the stands going nuts as well. That'd be fun.
Okay, counterpoint, I would like some A-grade legal LaFau violence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, I was wondering how we were going to finish the show on a high note, and we've done it.
I'm Nick. I'm Andy. I was just going to say, preferably on Papley.
I'm Andy. Oh, nailed it even more. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.